Hello, this is Nick Hood, and today, the day after Thanksgiving 2021, I'd like to share with you one of the great Thanksgiving stories in the Bible. It's the story of Jesus and 10 lepers. We find it in Luke chapter 17, starting at verse 11. I'd like to read this for you. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up, go on your own way. Your faith has made you well." And so what I'd like to do is to just take a couple of minutes and break this text down for us, because I think they're tremendous lessons about Thanksgiving. One of the high points for me in this story is it's kind of like the dessert after a meal. My mother-in-law makes sweet potato pie, and every Thanksgiving, I look forward to the sweet potato pie. I save a little bit else for the sweet potato pie, and to me, one of the high points in this story is like the sweet potato pie. The high point is that 10 men are healed of leprosy. Now, you have to remember, leprosy was a severe illness of the skin. It's pretty much been eradicated, but there are probably pockets in the world right now where somebody is suffering from leprosy. But during the time of Jesus, if a person was diagnosed with leprosy, they were cast out. That was a form of community health because they didn't know what else to do. And so lepers were shunned. Lepers were separated. Lepers were kept aside and away from the rest of society. And that's what's happening in this story. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem between the Galilee, where he's from, and, to get to Jerusalem from the Galilee, you have to go through Samaria. I have driven that road 3 times in my life, 3 different trips to Israel. And Samaria did not look particularly great to me. I found it to be dusty. I found it to be dry. I found it to be arid. There are nomads living there even today who, somehow they follow their sheep. And I don't know where they're feeding the sheep, because I didn't see much area. I didn't see much grass at all. But they're Bedouins, and they live under tents, big tents and little tents. And Jesus knew that they were Samaritan, and they were considered as foreigners, even though in the history of Israel, and even today, the Samaritans worship the same God as the Jewish people. The difference is their holy place is on a place called Mount Gerizim. For the Jews, they worship with Jerusalem being the holy place. And, I've also read, some may take issue with this, but I think one of the reasons why Jesus knew that they were Samaritans in this Samaritan village is that there had been quite a lot of intermingling racially and births with persons who were from Assyria and Perhaps either Persia, maybe Turkey and other points, maybe higher up in the Jordan. But you could tell a Samaritan a mile away because they were fair skinned, they were lighter skinned. And so Jesus says, were not there 10 who were healed? Why is it only that one and this foreigner has come back to praise God? And so let me break down the lessons that I see in this text. Number one, Jesus did not set out to heal the lepers. That was not the point of the visit. The point of his visit is he was just passing through a village. The village is not even named. He is passing through a village en route to Jerusalem. And one of the lessons to me from this is that very often some of the most consequential things that happen in our lives are not planned. I think back to my first day in divinity school. Here I am at Yale Divinity School. The first hour, I get the key to the room. I get my little orientation packet. I think I signed up for the classes that I wanted. And then I went to scout out my room. And I go to the room, I look at the mattress, and it looks like it's been there since the 1800s. And even though I have a pretty high threshold or low threshold for being grossed out, that mattress grossed me out. And you have to remember, see, I had shipped my sheets via Greyhound. And I knew in advance it would take 3 days for my sheets to arrive. But looking at that mattress, I said, I've got to buy a mattress, maybe a mattress cover, because I can't take it for 3 days. And so that second hour, I walked downtown in New Haven. And let me paint a picture for you. The Divinity School is up on a hill on a street called Prospect. And I'm walking down Prospect Street, just merrily strolling along. I'm trying to take in all the sights. I go past the science facility where the students studying science went. I go a little bit further past Woolsey Hall. And again, for me, this is a first experience. Then I go past the old campus of Yale, and then on the other side, you have the New Haven Green. And I go past all of that, and I start asking around, where can I buy sheets? And somebody pointed out to me, they said, keep going, and you'll find a mall. And there in that mall, there was a Macy's. I go into the Macy's, and it seemed like on the second floor and as far back as you could go was finally the sheet department. I go into the sheet department, and who should I see but a young woman who looked very attractive to me. She had on blue jean overalls and a blue and white checkered shirt. She had horn-rimmed glasses, and I looked at her, and lo and behold, she was buying sheets too. And I made the quick assumption. I said, I bet she's a student at Yale, just like me. And then I looked at her and she looked very cute. And I said, look what the Lord has brought me. That's what I said to myself. So I went out and I bought some sheets. I can't tell you what those sheets look like, but I remember what that young lady looked like. And as we got up to the cash register, I was at the register before she was, but she was right behind me. Being a gentleman, I asked her if she'd like to go before me. But I had another plan in mind. That was my way to get another look at her. And while we're waiting there at the cash register, her roommate comes in. And her roommate, Caroline Jackson, was loud. She started yelling, Nick, Nick. And I knew her because her grandfather was the treasurer of our church back in Detroit. And then she comes over and she gives the formal introduction to me and Denise. And She tells me that Denise is her roommate. She tells Denise that she knows me and that, you know, that I'm in divinity school. And I'm smiling to myself thinking, I'm saying, you know, at the very least, I'll get a dinner or lunch out of this. And so we walk out, and as I told my children, I went to Macy's to buy sheets, and I walked out with a wife. Now, they said, really, Dad, did it happen like that? I said, no, not exactly like that. I said, look, it took 3 years. We dated for 3 years, but a totally unplanned visit turned into something that was significant. And I think for many of us, if we look at our lives and are honest, we'll say that some of the most interesting things, maybe consequential things that ever happen, tend to be things you never plan. So that's first, you know, lesson in all of this. Another lesson was that there were 10 lepers in the story who approached Jesus. And they are unabashed. They are unashamed. They are uninhibited. They are shouting out from a distance, Master, have mercy on us. And there's a lesson in this. And the lesson is that if you want a blessing, you need to be unashamed to approach Jesus. Jesus will heal you. But Jesus will provide for you. Jesus will help you to get that job that you want. But you have to approach Jesus. And the prescription for healing that Jesus gives them is straightforward. He doesn't say, go to the doctor. He says, go and present yourselves before the priests. And I'm sure that those lepers, somebody in that group of 10 may have said, boy, that sounds mighty simplistic for a major example of healing. But that's what they do. Matter of fact, we don't even know if they ever get to the priests. What we do know is that the text tells us that they turned around from Jesus and headed toward the priests. And before they got to the priests, they looked at their hands, and the hands looked new. They looked at the feet, and the feet did too. I'm sure at some point, each of those men began to feel their faces. They may not have had a mirror, but they could feel the faces. They could see their hands and their feet, and they could realize, they did realize, that healing was taking place. And there's a lesson in this, and the lesson is that a great example of their faith in Jesus was to turn away from Jesus and to head toward the priests. And then the next thing that happens is one of those men turns around and he comes back to Jesus and he praises God. The text tells us in Luke 17 that he turns around and praises God. He prostrated himself on the ground at the feet of Jesus, and he is praising God with a loud voice. And there is a act of faith in this. Now, I don't want to denigrate the other 9, because who knows? Maybe they did actually go all the way to their priests to show the priests that they were healed. But the one who turns back really catches the attention of Jesus. And he says, were there not 10 who were healed? Why is it that this one foreigner has turned around and come back? And, you know, who knows? You know, maybe the other 9 were saying, you know, look, we've done what Jesus asked us to do, which is to go toward the priests. So he doesn't cast them into hell. He doesn't lambast them. But, you know, there's another lesson in this. Maybe that one leper who turns around, excuse me, to come back to Jesus is spontaneous. You know, in my life, I've been criticized sometimes for being spontaneous. But the reason why I'm spontaneous is I've learned through the years that the Holy Spirit is spontaneous. The Holy Spirit comes upon us like a thief in the night. We don't even know it half the time. And God is trying to talk to us. But some people are so rigid, they are so set in their way, that they have a difficult time getting outside of their zone. They have a difficult time, like this leper, saying thanks. Some people have a difficult time, a tough time saying, I'm sorry. I don't know if, there are some people I've met on both ends. They have a difficult time saying thank you and a difficult time saying, I'm sorry. But I found in life that those two words, and those four words, I'm sorry, or I'm thankful, I thank you. Those are very important, and they go a long way in life. All my life, I've tried to live my life guided by faith, and it's really important to me to say thank you. It's also important to say I'm sorry, but in this case, for today, I'm saying thank you. And earlier this year, I met a long-lost cousin named Marcia Joyner. She was 80 years of age. And my cousin Marcia, I'd never met her before, but I met her first on the telephone, and then we talked via Zoom. And my cousin Marcia lived in Honolulu, Hawaii. And it was amazing meeting her because she was my oldest living cousin. Now, she died a couple months ago, but it's amazing. In about an 8 month period of time, I got to know her, and I found out that she does, I think, a podcast. She was doing a television show, low power television show in Hawaii. And two or three times, I think two times, she had me on the show, and then a third time, she asked me to substitute for her. And it was just wonderful. But one of the wonderful things about getting to know my 80-year-old cousin Marcia is that she had memories of my father that I'd never heard before. My father, I think, is the youngest of eight children. And she told me that when she was 3 years of age, my father was there. He was the only one of his siblings still in the house. He was graduating from high school, and she said that my dad was hunched over, and he had scoliosis, which is a severe curvature of the spine. And she said, I was just 3 years old, so I was a little bitty girl, and I looked up, but your dad was bent over so severely at the back. It was like his head was almost at the level of my head. And she said, I had a delightful time with your dad because your dad liked to play with me, and he would do fun things with me. And she said that was really just a tremendous introduction to your dad. And she told me how, her father was my Uncle Marshall, who is the older brother of my father. And I told her a story my father told me about my Uncle Marshall. I said, my dad told me, Marcia, that once he was assaulted by a scout leader some gathering, and but they were in a building, and my dad, it happened in a bathroom, a restroom. And she said, he said, your father, Marshall, who had just come back from the military, from the army, he sensed that something was wrong, and he burst into the bathroom, and he beat up the scoutmaster. I said, what did he do to that scoutmaster? And he said, my brother Marshall wiped up the floor with him. And but from that, my dad told me, he said, never ever let your little brother go to the bathroom by himself. And that was a lesson my dad drilled into me with my brother Emery, as we would go to the ballpark to see the Detroit Tigers, the Detroit Lions play. That was always one of the rituals: walk your brother to the bathroom. Now, the story gets better than that because for my dad, he spent 6 months in a body cast to straighten his back out. He had major surgery on the back. They took, I think, tendons and muscles from his legs and somehow reconfigured them into his back. And my dad had a hunch, a hunchback. But unless you saw him exposed, say in an undershirt, you wouldn't realize that his back was like that. My dad, for those of you who did not know him, was one of the most energetic people I've ever met. He was so fast, my younger brother Emery called him Scoot Magoot. And my dad was into everything. And, he ended up being the second African American to serve on the Detroit City Council. Some people would say he's the first African American who was unashamed to show his face on a billboard, that he was actually an African American. The guy who preceded him, Bill Patrick, had a name that sounded like he could very well be Irish. And I understand in his campaign, they did not necessarily have a lot of photos of him. But my dad, who followed Bill Patrick on the Detroit City Council, could not deny what he looked like. He was a builder of housing, built some 40 acres of developed some 40 acres in the Detroit area of housing. And a new church for the Plymouth United Church of Christ. So back to my dad, he spent 6 months in a body cast, and when he got out of the body cast, he went to North Central College to get his grades up and get stronger in science because he wanted to be a doctor. He thought that his way of giving back to God would be to do what the doctors had done for him. He wanted to replicate that. He wanted to give back through healing. And so after 2 years at North Central College, he gets accepted at Purdue University. And at Purdue in West Lafayette, Indiana, my dad lived at the home of a Reverend and Mrs. Norman Reynolds. And Reynolds is a great guy himself. I wish I had met him. But Reynolds, suffered greatly. My dad told me that he had never seen a white person suffer for black people the way that Norman Reynolds had. And I said, "Dad, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, Reynolds and his wife leased out part of their house to him and I think three other African American students, but the city of West Lafayette thought that they were running a rooming house for international students. But it didn't take them long to figure out that these students were actually African American." And my dad said that the Reynolds were literally run out of town by gangs of white people. But before leaving town, Reynolds did one of his greatest acts for my father, which is he talked to my dad and he said, my dad told him he'd like to be a minister. And Reynolds said, "Well, would you ever think about going to Yale?" And my dad told me, probably very honestly, he said, "Where's that? And what's that?" And Reynolds told him, he said, "That's one of the best schools in America." And he said, "I'd like you to think about going to Yale." And my dad was saying, "Well, how can I go there? And, can I afford that?" And Reynolds introduced my dad to a doctor who examined my dad, and he came away with a diagnosis that my dad would never be able to walk straight. And so they did a little research on, opportunities for the Yale Divinity School, and what they found was that there was a specific scholarship set aside for students who were disabled. And so that doctor wrote a letter to the Yale Divinity School saying, "This man will never, ever be able to walk straight. And, and he's disabled." And so lo and behold, my dad gets a full ride to the Yale Divinity School. And, you know, the rest is history. And Reynolds, the guy who made it possible for me to, for my dad to go to Divinity School, Reynolds just, you know, he goes back to Yale too, but he goes back to study Chinese. He decided he wanted to be a missionary to China. And so he spends some years in China, but then he moves from there to the Philippines. He ends up at a place called Dumaguete City on Dumaguete Island. And there he helps with the founding of a school called Silliman University. Now, one of the high points for me in my life is in 2012, I was invited by Silliman University, along with my wife, for the two of us to co-teach. My wife taught in the law school for 3 weeks. I taught for 3 weeks in the divinity school. And lo and behold, some of the students, including the, not students, some of the faculty, including Dr. Ben Malayan, who is even to this day the president of Silliman University, knew Dr. Reynolds. Reynolds was their professor, and I told them the story I've just shared with you. And they were just so gratified. They actually took me to see the gravesite of Dr. Norman Reynolds. So I just want to conclude this, going back to the story of thanks and the 10 lepers. My dad decided that the way he would thank God was to become a minister. And, you know, and he became a minister because his body was just racked with pain. It was, you know, hideous in that he was bent over. But medical science was able to straighten my dad out. And so he gave back as a minister. And I tell you, in life, if you find one reason to give something back, that is a wonderful thing. And that's the lesson that I share with you today. Remember the 10 lepers. Remember the one who came back to Jesus, praising and thanking God. And I want you to ask yourself, when has the Lord done something in your life when you felt like you wanted to give back? And because that was the best way to thank God. That's the word I leave you with today. Thank you so much for sharing this with me. And God bless, God keep you, and I'll be back on this in a day or so. God bless.